This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Upgrade your business with Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. Shop Pay boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning fewer carts going abandoned and more sales going cha-ching. So if you're into growing your business, get a commerce platform that's ready to sell wherever your customers are. Visit Shopify.com to upgrade your selling today.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority. But to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. Obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one compliance solution helping startups get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. Vanta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. The platform connects you with trusted experts to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vanta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including Y Combinator and Techstar startups, who trust Vanta. For a limited time, get $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/simplify. That's vanta.com/simplify for $1,000 off.
Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene Podcast. I'm Dave Hendon. What a week it's been. I won't bore you with my internet problems, but I'm now using someone else's internet to record what is effectively the second half of this week's podcast. I said, if you listen to the first, Dan Murren from the Snooker Hall Podcast was very good to come on, but I had to do it from a public area, and I was a bit worried about the internet going down, so it wasn't too long. I thought we'll leave the emails. But I thought, now that I'm using someone else's internet. And by the way, when you say to someone, oh, I need to come round, I've got to record a snooker podcast, they do look at you a little bit strangely. And indeed, that's how they feel when they listen to it. But anyway, I'm going to do now the emails that have come in so that we're all up to date. So this is really part two of the podcast this week. And then there will be another one on Wednesday, the countdown. So it's effectively now almost harassment. There's so many episodes of this podcast, it's almost harassment. Anyway... hopefully all will be resolved soon enough and I'll get out of your way. So yes, we've got a big week, of course, coming up, the Xi'an Grand Prix. But we've had various emails about various things, and we're going to start with our dear friend here, Lee Wall. And Lee has this to say. Firstly, may I suggest for your top 10 list that you rank the best players from outside the British Isles? Well, that's exactly what I will be doing, but it will be the top 10 non-British players, so Ireland will be in there, but it'll be the top 10 non-British players. That'll be coming up on Wednesday, assuming... I don't have gone about this because it's pretty much the epitome of first world problems, but assuming the internet is up and running again. Otherwise, I will be just knocking on doors, basically, until someone allows me in. Anyway, Lee says, secondly, on a slightly odd topic, I was wondering if you'd written any obituaries for players. I noticed Ray Reardon's Guardian obituary was written by Clive Everton, and it's no secret that a lot of obituaries of famous people are written in advance and sit in a file to be used when the inevitable occurs, to be topped and tailed with the details of the death. I'm not asking you to name names, of course, but have you composed any advanced tributes for people who still walk among us? It always seems to me like a difficult exercise, and perhaps there's even something slightly spooky about it, trying to strike the right tone for a piece that might not be published for decades. Well, it's a good question, Lee. I mean, the short answer is yes, I have, because it's just basic kind of common sense in journalism in general. Because you want to be ready if there's a... I mean, they were rehearsing the Queen's death on television in the 1970s. I mean, literally, they have to be ready. They have all the packages ready to go. Now, in the snooker world, that mainly applies for sort of older players. But, for example, Ray Reardon, I was aware that he was very unwell because Mark Williams told me. He'd been in contact with the family. So it was pretty obvious that, you know, at the age of 91, you know, he was kind of at the end of the road because he was so badly ill. So I wrote a piece for the Eurosport website in advance of him passing away because I wanted it to be as good as I could make it rather than sort of scrambling around on the day. I mean, it was actually during the Shanghai Masters, so I was working on that anyway. but it was good to have it written to try and do him justice. And really, you're trying to do two things. You're trying to celebrate his achievements and tell the story of his life and career. And you're also trying to put into context his contribution. Now, in the case of Ray Reardon, that was, of course, massive to snooker. But you don't want to be doing that last minute. I mean, going back, I remember when Paul Hunter passed away. I mean, he was obviously a very young man, but we knew he was ill. Obviously, there can be terrible tragedies that come out of nowhere. But in the main, for the older players, it makes sense. I think I'm right in saying that when Peter O'Sullivan, the BBC horse racing legendary veteran commentator, passed away, his obituary in one of the newspapers had been written by Julian Wilson, who was the BBC racing presenter. But I think he had passed away prior to Peter O'Sullivan. Maybe the other way round. But anyway, it was one combination there of those two. But it was just on file. And of course, you know, all the kind of key details were in there. The obituary sort of world is a very interesting one, I think. And the whole obituary departments in newspapers. In fact, I saw a fascinating documentary a few years ago about the man who sort of ran the New York Times obituaries department. It's just common sense to have them sort of nailed down, in advance, really. It's not always a nice thing if you sort of were particularly, you know, on good terms with somebody, but it is just a sort of fact. But anyway, thank you for the question. Now, Philip Zhao from Madison, Wisconsin. He says, Will Snooker Tour just announced that the Xi'an Grand Prix will be broadcast for free on Matchroom Live. I think it's a great move that WST and Matchroom are making this free to watch. Though, can you give us some insight on why the TV broadcast didn't pick this up? Not really, because I don't really have any insight, to be honest, Philip. Other than the fact that, in terms of Eurosport, it's a new event, so it wasn't part of the existing contract. I think for European television in general, obviously the time that the broadcast would be, like early morning and sort of lunchtime, that's not peak time, so, you know, you wouldn't expect like the BBC or ITV, for example, to want to show it. But I agree with you, and I did say this on the first half of the podcast. I think it's good that it's been made available for free. Obviously it's only going to be table one, but even so, people forget. You go back to the early days of snooker in China, before Eurosport started showing those events, you just couldn't watch them. Simple as that. If you were in the UK or Europe, and you know, you'd have to basically rely on CFAX or even the next day's newspaper to find out who won the various matches. So things have changed a lot. The early China Opens you did not see live. So obviously, you know, everyone would love bells and whistles, but you can watch it on this platform, and that's a good thing. Philip continues, on a separate note, they also announced the prize money for the Saudi Arabia Masters, an incredible $500,000 top prize, matching the World Championship. My question for you is, how do you feel about a best of 19 event and the crown jewel of the sport, a best of 35 event, having the same prize money? In my opinion, the prestige of the event is determined by, in order of importance, number one, the format, i.e. length of match, number two, the field of players, e.g. the Tour Championship, number three, the history of the event, and finally, number four, prize money. Incidentally, this is why, even though I support getting snooker among other key sports into the Olympics, I think it would be inevitable that it's played in very short formats, which does not match the supposed prestige of the Olympic event. I've been enjoying your episodes in the quiet season. Hope to hear you on commentary soon. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Philip. Well, I will be working on the Saudi Arabia tournament. I can reveal. It's just a fact. But in terms of, well, it's interesting how you rank the prestige, because I would imagine the players don't rank it like that. I imagine for them, the prize money would be number one because they're trying to earn a living. And of course, a lot of them low down the ranks struggle to do that. So an event like Saudi and the World Championship, they're not quite parallel. The sort of later stages are earlier on. There's a little bit less money in the Saudi, but it's still, you know, a massive, massive event. I don't think 2-day finals are something that you're going to see again. I don't think people really want them in general. I'm sure hardcore snooker fans like them. The World Championship best of 35 is established, but I don't think new events are going to have them now, because if you're asking people to pay the money to go along, they want to see a result. They don't. You can imagine if you invite someone to a football match and say, by the way, we're playing the first half today and the second half tomorrow, they might think, well, we'll come tomorrow then when we see who wins. So best of 19, I think that's a perfectly fine distance personally. You can have some really long best of 19s actually. I think best of 19, an all-day final, is absolutely fine for this event. How do I feel about having the same prize money, I think it's great. More the merrier. And of course, we don't actually know the World Championship prize fund yet. That might go up. They might put that up to distinguish it. Yeah, I think this is a quite remarkable development, really, that this tournament's come along. It's a 10-year deal, remember, and it's got massive prize money. The players, I can tell you, are very, very, very happy to have this on the calendar. And it's going to be great to have the whole tour in Riyadh, plus the wild cards. Most of them will be local Saudi wild cards. You know, that's a unique, I said this on the first half of the podcast, that's a unique thing to have 144 players at a venue. It can be a lot of matches to play. It's going to be exciting, I think. But I don't mind it being best of 19. It's a little short early on, best of sevens in the first few rounds, but that's just because they've got to get the matches played. I'm sure players would prefer longer matches, but you know, you've got to get them played basically. That's the issue. That's my answer. Now, we haven't talked Crexit for a while, so Paul Regan has written in. He says, good hi, that's a new one, and happy new season, Dave. Well, and to you, Paul. So I'm late to the party, but having had a bit of time to reflect, I'd like to add a thought to the Crucible debate. I went this year for the first time, just in case its days are numbered. I wanted to experience a World Championship in that exact same room we used to watch on the family TV set in the 80s and 90s. It didn't disappoint, and neither did Sheffield. We stayed at the Crow Inn on Scotland Street, a friendly real ale boozer on the edge of the city. Boozer is an underrated word, I think. You don't often hear it these days, but anyway, nice to hear it there. Our two-night trip ticked the right boxes. Pints in the Graduate, a quarter-final session on the big screen in the city square, a few frames at a friendly local snooker club, and, of course, a semi-final session in the famous theatre itself. It was great to witness the one-table setup that had hosted so many iconic matches over the years, including those I'd watched as a kid with Dad and Grandad. If the argument to hang on to the Crucible is tradition, I get it. I'm sold. It makes sense that each world champion marches the same path to victory. The challenge is consistent, and each name engraved on the Joe Davis Trophy is directly comparable. But is that the right way to look at it? So far, this debate has focused on either staying for nostalgia or leaving for extra seats. Maybe it's not about capacity or the Crucible building at all. It is possible we've outgrown the competition format itself. Or is it possible we've outgrown the competition format itself? Longer matches aside, the World Championship is fairly similar to other ranking events, qualifying, some rounds, a few finals and a winner. If the sport has grown, shouldn't the format of the greatest prize be elevated too? If we were to imagine from scratch a crowning event of the season, wouldn't it somehow thread its way through the whole calendar? Wouldn't it be an achievement of more than a few weeks' effort? It'd also give a hefty PR opportunity and maybe with it the chance for the tournament to travel a bit. I can't help but think the huge audience in China should be rewarded. Before you answer this, I should add I'm utterly conflicted on the subject. Push comes to shove, I'd vote Crucible. But I tend to subscribe to the idea that nostalgia is a bit like beer or cake. Fun, but too much of it really isn't good for you. I just wonder whether these lovely, comfy, rose-tinted glasses we all wear for Sheffield might be obscuring our view a bit. I mean, possibly. Well, definitely, I think nostalgia plays its part, but it's not just nostalgia, it's continuity, isn't it? And you mentioned watching with your dad and granddad, and their memories a lot of people have, and the memories a lot of people cherish. I mean, it used to be, the World Championship, going back, it used to be it was a year-long event, and they would play matches all year round. You couldn't do that now, because there's so many tournaments to fit in. It changed after 1972. Alex Higgins won it. He'd played for 11 months in various venues. But such was the public interest in him winning it, promoters thought, actually, we can package this into a fortnightly event, and it has its self-contained, you know, 2 weeks. And I think people like that. So I don't really see an issue with the format, personally. But it's interesting, this week, Barry Hearn actually was interviewed on ITV, I think at the racing. Anyway, he's playing in the US Open pool next week, which is a lifelong ambition. And I suppose as president of Matchroom, it wasn't that difficult to get a place in it. But anyway, he was asked about the Crucible, and he has rowed back quite significantly. And looking back on Sheffield this year, the World Championship, it seems to me that Barry, and he's not, one thing Barry is not, he's daft, okay? He went there, and if you look back at his statements, they were very kind of performative, I think. He was very much there as bad cop, delivering, you know, bad news. And that means, of course, there'll be a good cop somewhere who will probably not be quite so outspoken, who will be speaking, I'm sure, to Sheffield right now about the future of the tournament. I think World Snooker actually do want to stay in Sheffield. But Barry went there shouting the odds, saying things that people didn't like, and that seemed really not necessarily designed for a snooker audience. It was designed for the people at Sheffield City Council. It's hard to know, though, what... I mean, he said this week he'd like to stay at the Crucible, but he wants a good deal from Sheffield. It's hard to know exactly what more they can do. They're not going to build a new venue. There is a bigger venue, Sheffield Arena. It would be too big for the World Championship. But, I mean, it's interesting that's not even been mentioned. There's a bigger venue in Sheffield they could go to. They could possibly configure it so there are more seats. In terms of the Crucible, will Snooker Tour get it for nothing? Now, is the suggestion that Sheffield should pay them? Now, it used to be that Will Snooker years ago paid to hire the Crucible. Then they got the Crucible for free. Is the suggestion now that Sheffield City Council should give them, let's say, $500,000 a year? I mean, I'm plucking that figure out of the air, for the right to stage the tournament. That suddenly sounds like great business. Because here's the thing about venues in Britain, okay? The good ones are really expensive, okay? They're really expensive, and you've got to sell a lot of tickets to make money back. The venue in Manchester was fantastic, Manchester Central. Really good venue, not cheap. Telford, not cheap. A lot of these venues cost a lot of money. So World Snooker, okay, it's a small venue, the Crucible, but you can't buy history, and they don't spend a penny on hiring it. Now, if they could get to a position where they're actually getting money themselves to go there, then that suddenly becomes a lot more attractive. And it's interesting. I've sort of, my own sort of internal pendulum, if you want to put it that way, has swung one way and another about what was going to happen. I remember a year ago, I was in Barry Hearn's office in Brentwood and was convinced coming out of that the World Championship would be leaving the Crucible. A lot of what's been said since has sort of followed down that path. But behind the scenes, I think there is still will to keep it there. We'll see. We'll see. At the moment, we've got three more guaranteed there. It would not surprise me if we stayed there, but that is not guaranteed. But we're going to find out, you know, over the next year or so, I'm sure. But anyway, I'm glad you enjoyed your trip there anyway, because it's just a great pilgrimage, isn't it, for snooker fans. Now then, we've got here Gavin Power. He sent a couple of emails, a couple of top 10 suggestions, including the non-British ones, which we are doing on Wednesday. He says, your request for players we'd like to do well this season led me to a premonition of the 2025 World Championship. I can unveil all, okay? He's called this Return of the Batman, and he's put a lot of heat into this, is what I'll say. So we'll read it out as best we can. Look, so this is from Gavin. The 2025 World Championship proved to be quite an epic. So this is next year he's talking about, with more than a hint of the surreal and spooky along the way. The intrigue started at the qualifiers, with an invigorated Stephen Hendry giving it one final push to get to the main event. Progress saw him expunge a returning Stephen Lee and exercise some real retribution against Marcus Campbell, demolishing him 10-0. There's already three players who won't be in the tournament, but anyway, we'll continue. It's a flight of fancy. However, his journey was halted at the final hurdle by his old foe, the Whirlwind. Hendry was poised to steal the encounter in the 19th frame before stumbling on a routine black to the corner, Jimmy mopping up the remainders with a concise break of 58. I do feel, just jumping in, there's a whole generation of people scarred by that 94 final. I mean, you know, in retrospect, they should have had helplines. You know, Esther Ranson or someone could have had a helpline to get people through it. We'll continue. And so we arrived in Sheffield and the oddities commenced. Ronnie declared he was entering the South Yorkshire Cross Country Championship and would compete in the 10K during the first week. Steve Davis was on the decks, accompanying a highly revved up Rob Walker with player introductions. The curse of the Crucible continued, with Anthony McGill winning a marathon match against Karen Wilson, singing a Respotty Black at 11:02 PM. 3 days into the championship and Jack Lazowski holds a press conference. He's received an inordinate amount of fan mail from China, requesting that he does a Mark Williams-style naked interview if he wins the tournament. Now, this is a callback to our dear friend who wrote in, who, was very complimentary about Jack in general. Jimmy White's progress through to round two with a sound 10-3 drubbing of Neil Robertson. Robertson subsequently declares he's playing the best snooker of his career despite this setback. He sees nothing but success beyond. Ronnie grinds out a 10-6 victory over Jamie Clark, with the match frequently interrupted by a nuisance bat. The bat settles on Ronnie's shoulder during his final clearance break to the amusement of the crowd. Now, just jumping in, there'll be people saying, I really hope your internet goes down again. But that's unfair, because I'm reading this out, and Gavin has taken the time to write it, so we continue. Day 5 is unique. Rob Walker is the first member of the snooker scene to be prescribed beta blockers to keep his enthusiasm somewhat in check. Jack Lazowski has received more letters. In round 2, Mark Allen and Martin O'Donnell are locked at 1-1 after the first session. They return in the evening. Sean Murphy has continued with his player commentator role and all is looking good. He's playing sublime snooker. Ronnie progresses to the quarterfinals, having endured several attempts mid-match from Jan Verhaas to grasp the bat mid-air. Jan is large, but the bat is elusive. At 12-7 to Ronnie, Tom Ford is intrigued by the composure of the little creature, who's now settled in Ronnie's empty chair. Ronnie pots the final black and the bat scarpers. Again jumping in, what did we do before podcasts? Anyway, we continue. There's a little bit more here, but we'll rattle through it. Day 6 sees no let-up to Rob Walker's effusive energy, so he's advised to watch the third session of the Allen-O'Donnell match. After the first two sessions, the Irishman leads 2-1. The match appears to have the necessary soporific effect on Rob, who starts to doze off on camera. The bat is now a permanent resident during Ronnie's sessions. Ronnie appears unaware of the creature and strolls to a 13-6 quarterfinal win over Jimmy. They embrace and Jimmy tells him to go and stick it to Hendry in his record. Day 12 is disastrous. Hendry is withdrawn from commentary duties as he's woken up with two bite marks on his neck. The next day sees Steve Davis fall to the same fate. Dennis Taylor claims he warned them both for years about the dreaded double kiss. There we are. That's quite a good joke, I think. There's four more paragraphs. Here we go. Next day, Ronnie qualifies for the final of the South Yorkshire Cross Country, which is being held during the semi-final stages. Ronnie declares that snooker is his job, but running is his passion, and he withdraws for his match against Sean Murphy. Jack Jones faces Lazowski in the other semi-final. Jack Jones, who's not sleeping well, has offered to stay up all night to trap the bat. Lazowski, victorious, calls a further press conference and has vowed to undertake media duties in his birthday suit if the letters from China will cease. Sean Murphy's vowed to carry on commentary duties in the final. He'll wear an earpiece and mic and commentate during all elements of play. The final is a one-sided affair. Sean is exhausted from his simultaneous efforts of playing and commentating in a final. Jack lifts the trophy 18-7, and there's a thud as the bat, who has not been seen since Ronnie's departure, hits the table. It is dead. Jack rolls it over with the tip of his cue. The bat is wearing a tag on his leg. On it, the following is inscribed, okay? 8-2026RR. At the winner's press conference, Jack unveils a bag with his face on it. He says all correspondence was delivered in bags like this. In all his glory, he stands up and thanks Chow and a psychic Milo, GPT bot. Barry Hearn declares the Crucible must be shut because bats are a protected species and the event will be moving to China. Now, I feel I've missed something in all this. I'm sure there's something glaring that I've missed. But anyway, I've read it out, and there we are. It's a few callbacks there. Obviously, we had, an enthusiastic fan writing in about Jack Lazowski. I'm sure a lot of people will be happy to see him win the tournament next year. I suspect it probably won't unfold as described there, though. Now, finally, Christine Clements has written in and accusing me of ignoring one of her emails. I actually read this out, Christine. I remember reading this out. You went through various previous ranking event winners to discern a top 10 of all time. And I definitely read it out. So it's on there. Yeah, it's on there somewhere in the background, in the back issues. A lot of people will be listening to this saying, why did you bother? Why did you bother full stop when you started the podcast? But why did you bother recording this second half? I did it because people were good enough to write in and, you know, I thought I would read the emails out. And we've not learnt much, but we've learnt something, I think. By the way, there are other snooker podcasts you can listen to. That's the good news. But anyway, we'll be back on Wednesday with the top 10 non-British players. And there's a slight wrinkle to it, which I'll explain on Wednesday. Hopefully I'll be able to upload it. But that's basically it now. So snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. That is the address. And do let us know what you make of the Xi'an Grand Prix. If you're watching it, hopefully all will be well technically. It's going to be a big week for somebody, obviously, whoever comes out on top. Possibly career changing. We'll see. It could be one of the sort of reliable winners. It could be a new winner. We just don't know, but we're going to find out. But that's it. So on a rather ragged and some would say shambolic episode, hopefully by next week, the internet will be restored and my sanity will also be restored. But for now, on what's been not a great episode, it's goodbye-bye.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.